We're in the Perm region, and as you can see, it's the middle of winter. But the still white, snowy landscape here lies a rich, colourful history of legendary heroes, ancient seas, and mystic tales. So wrap up warm, and let's get stuck in. Morning, Max. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Peter.
Now, I tell you what, if you asked me to imagine a winter wonderland, this would pretty much be it. But unlike you, I'm not familiar with the legends and myths around here. How does that enhance the experience of being in the wilderness?
Actually, snow in Perm region is one of the most important tourist assets, and local myths and legends give trips here a special vibe. Uh-huh.
And where are we going today?
Today, we're heading to Paljud and Vitlan. So shall we go? All right, let's go. Starting up, and off we go.
Many of the rocks here are considered to be sacred by the locals, but Paljud of Stone in particular has a legend around it involving heroism and sacrifice. What is it?
One legend says that a mighty Bagatir named Paljud once lived on this mountain, guarding these lands. More specifically, he was charged with protecting the town of Chirdin. From over here, you could look out over the area where raiders would come. When he spotted the enemy, Paljud would light a huge fire as a warning. The people in Chirdin, about 30 kilometers away, could see the blaze and prepare for an attack.
Mm-hmm. So how far can you see on a clear day from here?
In good weather, you can see the mountains of the Vishera Nature Reserve from here. They're about 100 kilometers away.
Well, we're quite lucky with the weather today.
Incredibly lucky with the weather, yes. This gorgeous snow-covered Palma is unfolding right before our eyes. So, shall we keep going?
Let's do it. So we've just come all the way from Paljud of Stone over there, Max. Is that right?
Yes, we've come all the way from over there.
Uh-huh. How many kilometres is that about?
About 10 or 15 kilometres.
Uh-huh. And we're stood on these cliffs now, and they're at least 100 metres high, and they stretch about a kilometre in each direction. Now, to me, they look like they've just risen out of the ground. Tell me about the geology of this place.
This is the Vetland Reef.
Reef?
Local people just call it the Vetland Stone. But in geological terms, it's known as the Vetlan Reef. Long ago, the ancient Ural washed over this area. That was about 300 million years ago. This rock is made up of the remains of organisms from that ancient sea. Brachiopods, ammonites, bryozoans, and all kinds of other marine creatures that lived here at the time.
So 300 million years ago, we'd need our flippers and our snorkels because we'd be on the bottom of an ancient sea.
Yes, it was a warm, shallow sea.
Uh-huh. Okay. As well as being connected geographically, Paljud of Stone and Vetlan are also connected by local legend, which, of course, is about love and rivalry. Tell me the story, Max.
As always, all our ancient legends revolve around love. According to one, there were two epic heroes, Paljud and Vetlan, and they both loved the same girl, Vishera. They couldn't decide who she should be with, so they started pelting each other with stones. They threw stones for a day, then two, then three, then a year, until they eventually turned to stone themselves. When Vishara saw this, she turned into a river and flowed down between them. And now Palyud looks at Vietlan, Vietlan looks at Palyud, and Vishara runs between them.
So they're stuck there for eternity.
For many millions of years.
Where to next, Max?
Ну что, едем на поменянный?
Let's do it.
Well, unlike the snowmobiles, after so much time in the brutal cold, we were running on empty. So it was time for a quick pit stop.
Well, cheers, Max. Bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
That's amazing.
Великолепно.
Well, Max, after a bit of an Arctic trek, we've made it to another sacred rock, the Pamagnoni stone. Now, from the side, it looks a bit like a dinosaur, Stegosaurus. It has all these rock formations jutting out. How did it form?
In fact, it's one of the peaks of the Ural Mountains. At some 300 million years, these mountains are the oldest on our planet. Wind, moisture, and precipitation have eroded the ridges into these weird shapes. This was previously the ancient Ural Sea.
Now, tell me about the name. Pamagnoni sounds a bit like the Russian word paminat, to remember. What or who is commemorated here?
Indeed. Hunters and shamans would come here to commemorate their ancestors and pray to the gods, asking them for a good hunt.
Now, is it true that the landscape around here is full of diamonds?
Yes, that's true. In fact, there's research suggesting that there's a kimberlite pipe beneath this mountain and that some kind of development may take place there in the future. Of course, we wouldn't want that to happen because there's such beauty all around.
I guess we'll have to make do with the snowflakes here twinkling in the sun because they look a bit like diamonds.
Yes, indeed. In snowy weather and in clear, sunny conditions, the snowflakes give off a real sparkle, just like diamonds.
Snowmobiles can only take you so far, and where tracks no longer cut it, snowshoes take over so we can venture deeper into the winter taiga.
What do you think, Vasily? Maybe time to put our snowshoes on?
Yes, I think it's time. Look, this is a piece of aluminum equipment called a snowshoe. It has serrations, teeth, and a large surface area that lets us walk on snow without sinking into it.
So they look like they've changed from the ones that look like tennis rackets back in the day.
Indeed. They used to resemble tennis rackets in the past. But time goes on. This gear evolves as well. Now they no longer look like tennis rackets. They are this refined piece of aluminum that allows us to walk.
They look quite fashionable as well. Let's do it.
Look, you place your foot here, and then there are these fasteners. You put them in like this, and click, 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 it's closed.
Okay, let's see if I can manage. Now, I know they've been around for thousands of years, but have they always been popular in Russia as well?
No. In Russia, people preferred skis, hunting skis and skis with kamus, which is moose hide that helps you glide forward but doesn't slide backwards. Over the past 20 years or so, snowshoes have become popular, and extremely popular recently, as people go out exploring nature more often, looking for a calm walk through snowdrifts without having to struggle.
Ready? At last, yes.
So you've got it. Congratulations.
Just about, Vasily. That was quite exhausting, though.
That's it. Now we're on our feet. We can set off. But there's one more essential item, trekking poles. Here, take them. They are adjusted to your height. Your arm should be at a 90-degree angle, so the pole should reach right here. Unscrew it, pull it out, screw it back in. Everyone ready?
I think we're ready, Vasily. And where are we going today?
Today we're heading to the Usva Pillars, a very famous location in Perm region. These are rock pillars along a river. Well, you'll see everything yourself. We're heading there.
Sounds amazing. So we've made it at last to the Usva Pillars, Vasily. Now tell me, how do they form? We can see the odd pillar here and there, and mostly I just see this sheer, jagged cliff face.
About 300 million years ago, there was a sea here. The Permian Sea. During the Permian period. You know the Permian period?
Well, now I do, yeah.
It was discovered by Roderick Murchison, a Scotsman. This was a sea, and all this was a barrier reef. Marine life lived here. And even now, we can still see it in the rocks.
So you find fossils here as well?
We have various fossils here. Shells, coral, and more. Later, the ocean and the sea began to retreat, and the land started to rise. A river formed and carved through this entire cliff. And now we are standing 100 meters above that river, from where we can admire this view. The sea is gone, but now there are cliffs.
As well as looking stunning here, especially in this crisp weather, I guess they also provide quite a commanding view of the surrounding area. Were they ever used strategically for the people here?
Essentially, we are on the territory of a nature park. There have never been any defensive fortifications here. This is purely a natural location. And here, in the nature park, there are certain rules for visitors. For example, you're not allowed to light fires, but you are allowed to walk on snowshoes. And that's why we can enjoy nature here in all its magnificence.
Now, you did mention one pillar has a particularly interesting name. Can you tell me about that one again, please, Vasily?
There are lots of stone formations and pillars here, but the biggest has its own name, the Devil's Finger.
Why is it called that?
It's called that because whenever the locals didn't know what to call something or were scared of something, they'd attribute that object to the devil, calling it a thing of the devil. Hence, there are names like Devil's Fort, Devil's Forest, or Devil's Finger.
Well, I think we should maybe just enjoy the view before the sun.
Yeah, it's a great time to take some pictures and just enjoy the silence.
So, Vasily, we've been trekking for quite a bit through the forest up the side of a hill, and we've come across this grotto. What can you tell me about it?
This is Stolbovoy Grotto. It used to be a cave where ancient people took shelter. They had a fire here, a dwelling. And archaeologists have found simple everyday objects that confirm this. Chipstones, chisels, establishing that this was indeed a site inhabited by ancient people. Over time, the cave collapsed, and now it is a grotto where we can stand and explore history.
Mm-hmm. I can see that people to this day, judging by the campfire there, still use it for shelter.
Sometimes people come here to have tea or a picnic.
Well, should we go further? So So here we are, Vasily, we made it, the stone town. I mean, it's really hard to put this place into words. It's almost like the ruins of an ancient civilization. Where exactly are we?
You're right. We've arrived at the stone city. This is a rock formation made of quartz sandstone. In summer, you can see white sand lying all around. That's quartz. These rocks are 300 million years old and date back to the Carboniferous period. That's the geological and official version of how it got here.
Well, this place is so surreal, so unique, that I'd be extremely surprised if there weren't any myths or legends about it. Are there?
There is also a legend that creatures once lived here known as the white-eyed Chud. They were strange beings with white eyes. Then, people like you and me came. Frightened by the newcomers, the Chud went underground and their homes turned to stone. That's just a legend. But in fact, it has something in common with the history of Russia. In the past, various tribes lived on these lands, and of course, they were all pagans. Later, the Slavs came, and the process of conversion to Christianity began. But not everyone accepted it, and some withdrew into the forest, into hermitages, hiding from the newcomers. That is why these legends are so closely intertwined with history.
After our trek into this deep winter wonderland, there's no better way to wrap up our trip in the Perm region than by taking it all in from a bird's eye view.
Igor, Peter, nice to meet you. Igor, очень приятно.
Мне тоже.
Now, I've been lucky enough to fly in a hot air balloon before, but we were in the countryside then. Are you sure we're okay to set off from this square in the center of town?
Yes, of course. Our town is very small, so we studied the weather before every flight. We realized that there's always the possibility of flying beyond the town limits and landing somewhere in the fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, that fills me with confidence. Shall we set off?
Okay.
So my last balloon didn't have a convenient door like this one.
I think it's better.
Yeah. So the last time I flew was in spring, Igor. What are the challenges of flying a hot air balloon in the depths of winter like this?
Flying in winter has its own peculiarities. The air temperature must not be below minus 20 degrees Celsius. And we understand that you need to stand here for about an hour. So there are certain nuances. You can fly in winter, but for some reason, most people think that hot air ballooning is only a summer activity. In winter, we have very few flights, but just look at these incredible views. And most importantly, landings are always soft, right into snowdrifts.
Are you worried about a buildup of ice and snow on the canopy, or is that not a risk?
No, we're not worried, for the simple reason that a hot air balloon flies according to the laws of physics. Inside, at the very top, the temperature can exceed 120 degrees Celsius. Accordingly, as you saw, when we set it up just now, it was damp from previous flights because the snow had melted, but it dried literally within 5 minutes.
And talking about the laws of physics, I guess the air is denser in the winter, and that must mean you can fly higher. What sort of altitude can you reach in a hot air balloon like this?
In fact, from a physics standpoint, flying in winter is much easier. You can stay airborne longer, and gas consumption is lower because there's much more lift. Flight altitude depends, at least in our country, and I believe it's the same elsewhere, not due to the weather, but legal regulations.
Oh, got you.
Kungur has what's called a Class G airspace zone, which means we can fly up to an altitude of 1,500 meters on any given day simply by filing a notification. But if we need to go higher, we can climb as high as 3 kilometers here over Kungur. However, in major cities, where there are airports and so on, every location naturally has its own set of flight restrictions.
I know you're very experienced, Igor, but have you ever had any hairy moments when flying?
After 20 years of piloting, we have come to understand that there are several types of flights. Here in Kungur, we have both commercial flights, or fun flights as they're sometimes called, and competitive ones during sporting events. When it comes to commercial and sightseeing flights, like the one we're doing today, we simply don't fly in bad weather, and hot air ballooning is rightfully considered the safest form of aviation. So no, there haven't been any serious incidents during flights like these. Competitive flying is a different story. The conditions are tougher. The wind can be stronger, but we'll still go up. We've had some rough landings. There have been minor, unexpected situations, but never anything that would make me reconsider being in this profession, or anything that would put lives at risk.
And now for a more philosophical question, Igor. When you're flying out above the countryside and there's just this white landscape as far as the eye can see, it's silent. What do you think about when you're not monitoring the height and the altitude and the speed and direction?
I tell all the guests I fly with, people often ask me, don't you ever get tired of it? What could you possibly think about after 2,000 flight hours? But every flight is unique. Every flight is different in its own way. I might see something I've never seen before. Just 2 weeks ago, for example, we were flying in winter and broke through a low cloud layer. Then, as we descended, there it was, a sea of clouds, sunshine, and sheer beauty. At one point, during the descent, our speed matched the speed of falling snowflakes. Fog all around, nothing visible, and the entire world seemed to freeze in place. And then, like something out of the Matrix, a snowflake begins to drift upwards. It is an indescribable feeling. And with every flight, you catch yourself noticing these tiny details.
Well, Igor, thank you so much for taking me up today. It's been amazing.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.